This is The Agenda from News Radio 560, KPQ, and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern are open for discussion.
All right, joining us on the program in the second half hour, we will have a little visit with Jeff Clark, who handles public affairs for the Bureau of Land Management. They have some new fire restrictions going into effect Saturday morning at midnight throughout eastern Washington as the weather gets a little bit drier and warmer, and we need to be safer for fire protection. I'm Dave Bernstein on The Agenda, and our guest is Lyle Marquardt from the city of Wenatchee City Council, and he used to spend a little time in the radio booth at KCMU at the University of Washington, so he knew where the microphone was, and he knew where the headphones were, and how to put them on. So, Lyle, thanks for coming in the studio today. How you doing?
Oh, pretty good. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing well. And you had mentioned we were visiting in the studio. Next week, you are off to Association of Washington Cities Conference to learn how to get more grant funding. Every city needs it.
More grant funding and learning more about the complexities of running a city.
Lyle is serving in the District A seat for the city of Wenatchee and up for re-election. And just get your reaction real quickly to how do you like? We still have some at-large seats, but we have five districts now. So how do you like that? How did you like that overall process to move to this district plus two process?
It was a little bit difficult, but we got there, and it is proving to be a benefit. We're getting new people running in District 1 and District 4, which is what we wanted. We didn't want to have nobody run, and so we're very happy about that.
And you think in the future, as everyone kind of gets used to this, and I see how this works, that maybe we'll see even more candidates running from each of the districts?
Oh, hopefully. That's up to the people out there if they want to do it. It's a very valuable experience, I find, and I'm hoping more people will actually run.
You were a link coach operator. We call them bus drivers. I think when you operate you call it a coach. You did it for 20 years.
Yes, I did. I started one of the original drivers for Link, and was there for the whole 20 years.
And decided there was a public service yearning in you, and what have you enjoyed about serving on city council so far?
I find it very intellectually stimulating experience. It's nice to be able to connect with people, hear their problems, their issues, and then be able to discuss them with other people on the council.
Now, you have driving that bus. There, I call it a bus. You call it a coach. Driving that Link coach for 20 years. You would deal with folks from all walks of life in that capacity. And I know that's an important part of your campaign, really connecting, particularly with the blue-collar workers. I know that's an important aspect of your campaign.
Yes. I've been a blue-collar worker my whole life. Blue-collar workers are, what should we say, the foundation to so much of our jobs and so on.
And we were talking out in the lobby. You said sometimes it's kind of hard for maybe some blue-collar workers to be able to make it to a city council meeting. I know some boards or commissions or things like that, sometimes they'll move meetings to special places or even to different times. Is that something maybe city council could do on occasion?
Well, the Mayor Koontz installed council committees, and we have, I'm on the museum board. I'm on the liaison with the museum board. That meets during the day, 11:30. Then on the North Central Washington Economic Development District. So we have these different boards, the LTAC and so on. And so these come during the day, but they're also necessary. So it can be a problem for people to get off work to get to them.
So would you like to see some of these or more meetings held at different times that is a little bit more accessible to a blue-collar worker? Or what's the solution there?
I'm not sure that's possible, to tell the truth, because you have your planning commission. You've got, all these other boards that are meeting at night, like in City Hall. And so there's not a lot of room to move them around.
Sure. So why are you seeking another term?
I find it very stimulating, intellectually stimulating, interesting, and I enjoy it. And want to continue.
Sure, sure. Well, let's talk about probably one of the biggest issues for any community, and with all the candidates who are running for city or even county roles around here, and that is affordable housing. Now, we have a number of apartment units coming online, but they are nice apartments, and they don't come with a necessarily a real affordable rent each month. So what's the dynamic that's going on there as you see it, and a solution to getting more affordable rents for people in our community in Wenatchee?
Okay, the city cannot build affordable housing. What we're trying to do is get market rate to bring down other rents lower down the downriver, as I say, or downstream, is about the best way. We do have some affordable housing going out, like where Vail Theater is, and so that will help. But again, it's we're constrained because we have a river and a mountains, and that creates our problem of our building more housing.
So how are we going to be able to create more of these affordable units? Are we solely at the mercy of what the market's going to? Is there anything the city can do?
Well, not much the city can do, but actually it's what East Wenatchee and Douglas County can do. They have a lot more flat land than we do. And so we're hoping that to get houses built over there will create, not a glut, but slow down or plateau the prices of housing and for apartments.
We're talking with Lyle Marquardt, who is running for re-election for another term. District A seat, which is going to be on your August 6th primary ballot. There are three candidates for the seat. Lyle is the incumbent in that role, and there'll be two other candidates in that August 6th primary. What about our situation although the numbers actually were down a little bit as far as the homeless count goes compared to a year ago, so I suppose that's a good trend. But a homeless situation is emerging as a bigger issue here in Washington State. It's really swelling over in the Seattle area. Are you concerned that we'll see more and more of a trend of homeless here on our streets, and how we're addressing that here in the city of Wenatchee?
Okay, I'm hoping we don't have a large increase. We have a homeless commission that's working, Community Development Department has Sandra Osteen that's all involved in homelessness. So we're hoping that we can keep it under control.
What do you think are some of the drivers of that? Is it addiction? Is it the economy? Is it mental health issues? D, all of the above?
All of the above. Because you have, when you have inequality in incomes, like we have in this country, that tends to be people at the very bottom, especially having a problem with alcohol or drugs, they end up losing their job, and then they can't get another job. And so then, of course, they lose their house, and then they're on the streets.
Are you satisfied that the city is being proactive enough in that regard of the homeless in our community?
I think so. There's probably more we can do, but we're trying to be as proactive as we can with the funds available.
We're talking with Lyle Marquardt, who's running for the city of Wenatchee. The homeless is an issue that touches a certain aspect of our community. Another issue for our community that affects anyone who gets in a car and drives through the north corridor of town. is impacted by traffic congestion. In fact, we already kind of talked about it. Next week you're going to go over and learn how we can get more money to solve the traffic congestion on North Wenatchee Avenue, what's called the Confluence Parkway Project. Maybe describe a little bit of that. There's a hefty price tag for that, $120 million. Can we afford that? Can we afford not to address it?
Well, if we're trying to get the infra grant out of Washington, D.C., and some money out of Olympia. And that way we probably can afford it. Otherwise, by ourselves, we cannot do it. And it's going to be a collaborative effort by Link, the city, and actually the county to do this. One thing, I'm on the Legislative Priorities Committee for Association of Washington Cities, and we're meeting on Thursday morning to set the legislative priorities for the next session of the legislature.
What is your biggest priority for the city of Wenatchee as a council member?
That's hard to say. There's a lot, but transportation is one right
that's
up
like,
there.
Which of your children is your favorite? I realize yeah. I realize that. But transportation,
housing, economic development for jobs very important. You know, because as more and more as they automate the food industry, that's going to create people that are going to need jobs in other industries.
Well, what can a city do to bring in more jobs? You can't really offer, like, tax incentives or things like that, but what can a city do?
Well, through Steve King, our economic development director, we managed to get the Diamond Factory foundry in town here, and that helps. When they get running, they'll have a few jobs. That's pretty much what you can do is just start selling your city as a place to be and a place to work.
We are talking with Lyle Marquardt, who's running for the city of Wenatchee. We need water, and I know the city has been looking at an alternative source so that we don't run out in a few decades. There have been some efforts to look at the regional approach with Chelan PUD and also the city of East Wenatchee. Haven't quite gotten there yet, but it's some few decades down the road, we're going to need some more water. And So how do you think the city is doing in tackling this?
Well, it actually is not so much we need more water when you read a redundancy of water.
I should say, yes, a redundancy. Exactly. That's the perfect word.
Yeah, because we don't have our water comes from East Wenatchee through the Obdasian Bridge and a big pipe underneath there. And that ever to break, we'd only have 2 hours of water for the city, and that would not be very acceptable. So we've been looking. It's an expensive project. We've just authorized another drilling, so we'll have to see how that comes out.
It's been reported it could cost around $50 million to connect a well in Malaga to the current system. How could we pay for that?
Hopefully through grants. And, you know, it's going to have to be done. It's one of the things you have to do it. It's not can we do it, is it, you know, it has to be done. So we'll figure out a way to do it.
All right, so street maintenance. I guess congestion's certainly part of the whole traffic issue. I was just kind of complaining to the mayor when he was in here about a week ago, and I know that there's going to be I can't remember how many miles are going to be worked on this summer. Do you get a lot of complaints about streets? You're a District A, so you're an at large council member, so. You can get an earful from everyone.
You know, it's really interesting. We don't really get that much. In fact, we get more compliments on the work that was done, like on 28 through town, Mission and Chelan, and then the off streets that we got done at that time. And so we get actually more, compliments than we do complaints.
Well, I want to complain about my street. I guess many folks could do that. I guess we tend to want to at least accept the fact that obviously the busier streets carry more vehicles and therefore are going to deserve more attention. But I know that individuals all have complaints about the potholes in their streets or the dips and valleys on their particular neighborhood streets. City can't afford to fix them all.
No, it can't. There's no way you can get to a PCI of 100%. We're aiming for 75%. I have a little anecdote that I like to say is that the people driving up Okanagan, the police don't stop people driving up Okanagan if they're swerving. It's only if they're going straight because the people who are swerving are missing the potholes, and the people going straight out got to be drunk.
Well, we want to hear from Lyle Marquardt. Why vote for you coming up in the August primary? There are three candidates on the ballot for District A at large. Two will move on to the November general election, so why select Lyle as one of the choices for November?
Because, well, partly because a blue collar representative. I'm the, only non-professional on the city council. And then plus, I am very enthusiastic. I love the city, as a transplant, and, I want to keep working for it.
All right. What's the easiest way to get in touch with you if they'd like to learn a little bit more about supporting you? Is there a Facebook page or a website or anything like that?
I do have a Facebook page, but you can go on the city website, and it has my contact information on there.
Okay. Go to City of Wenatchee website, and that's how you can find contact information for Councilman Lyle Marquardt. Lyle, how long have you been on city council?
This is my fourth year.
Okay. And you originally fulfilled an unexpired term and then were reelected unopposed.
No, I didn't do the unexpired term. What I did is I interviewed for it, but I didn't get it. And so I filed the second day of the filing period.
Okay. I'll get that straight. Alrighty, thanks for joining us. We appreciate that, Lyle. And again, August 6th, the primary, Lyle Marquardt is here running for District A at large. News Radio 560 KPQ time is 12:30.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ, KPQ.com, and streaming on Alexa or the KPQ mobile app.
Easy for me to say, 12:34 now on The Agenda. I'm Dave Bernstein, and joining us, Jeff Clark, who handles public affairs for the Bureau of Land Management. And new fire restrictions have been ordered for Eastern Washington. It's getting to be that time of the summer. They take effect this Saturday morning at midnight. And we wanted to make sure that you're aware of what you should not be doing. So, Jeff, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I wanted to maybe clarify a little bit for folks who maybe are confused. And the Bureau of Land Management, for those to be aware, that's not a state agency. It's a federal agency. So maybe talk a little bit about not only what the Bureau of Land Management is charged with around our neck of the woods in the Northwest.
Sure. So we're part of the Department of the Interior, and we're actually Washington and Oregon, so we're one of the districts. We cover the entire state of Washington, and then in Oregon they've got 9 districts, and then the headquarters is for the region is out of Portland. And so even though we're called the Spokane District because our office is in Spokane, we also have an office in Wenatchee and a national monument over in the San Juans. So basically, we cover, from border to border, the entire state, about 470,000 acres.
And what kind of land management responsibilities do you have? Now, we tend to, or at least I tend to think of it in a fire situation. We'll hear Department of Natural Resources, Forest Service, and BLM crews have responded, is it just fire protection, or does it go beyond that for the Bureau of Land Management in terms of beyond fire protection?
No, way beyond that. So we're what's known as a multiple use agency. So basically, the federal lands that we manage are managed for as many uses as possible without major conflicts. So it could be for wildlife habitat, for recreation, for transmission lines or energy development, mining, I mean, pretty much grazing, pretty much anything you can think of that people might do or want to do on public lands, that's what we manage our lands for. And fire is a big part of that as well, and then just trying to make sure that people are being, thoughtful about how they're using public lands in a way to help prevent causing fires.
Well, we've gotten to that time of the year, and the fire restrictions that are going into effect involve kind of in two major areas: explosive target use, where you can and can't operate a motorized vehicle, and some precautions about parking motorized vehicles, and then a little bit of a nuance about where you can use a campfire. So we wanted to make sure that folks were aware of these restrictions with this order that go into effect midnight. So let's maybe have you kind of run down the basics for us, and then I'll throw some more questions your way, Jeff. So what takes place starting Saturday morning at midnight?
So, and just to be clear, this is only for BLM managed lands by the BLM and the BOR, Bureau of Reclamation. We have a memorandum of agreement signed with them, so we handle their fire suppression because they don't have resources to do that. And so these restrictions are only for, you know, us and BOR. And, you mentioned the exploding targets. That and fireworks are never allowed, but this order just kind of reminds people of that. They're never allowed on our lands. As far as campfires, right now we're restricting those to only BLM provided. So if you go to a approved campground or a developed campground and there's steel rings there, then you can have a campfire in there, and then you can also have liquefied and bottled gas stoves and heaters as long as you have at least a 10-foot diameter clearing. So that's where the campfires are at right now, and then later on in the year when it gets even more dry, that will probably be limited to only the liquefied and bottled gas stoves and heaters, but that's not the case now. Right now you can still use the steel rings if they're there. And then as far as motorized vehicles, we're just wanting people to, you know, try to stay on developed roads, and then if you're in a road that's not been cleared, like the sides are really heavily vegetated, or in the middle between the tire ruts, if that veg is really high and dry, then we're asking you to stay off of those, because that's one of the major ways that we have fires caused. And for BLM in Washington, 80% of our fires are human caused, and a large part of that is with target shooting. So target shooting has not been, you know, there's been no restrictions placed on that other than the, you can't do tracer rounds and you can't do exploding targets. But like I said, that's always the case. The only thing that we're asking people that if they're out target shooting, for them to just please be mindful of what the temperatures and the wind speeds are. If it's a really dry, hot, and a windy day, it's probably not the best day to go target shooting, and you know, just kind of make sure that none of your ammunition has steel, and that the target area, at least 20 feet around the target, is free of dry vegetation.
This seems to be the source of the significant fires. It seems like each summer we kind of tend to hear, well, that big fire, we ended up finding out it was caused by some illegal target shooting. Sad to say, at least anecdotally, it seems like we hear about a pretty good-sized fire each year, and perhaps maybe many more that are caused by this very activity.
Yeah, and it's not so much, sometimes it's not even illegal target shooting, it's just target shooting on at a time that it's technically legal to do it, but it's not a wise time to do it. Like I said, if it's really dry or windy and hot conditions, then that's not a good day to do that.
I guess people that recreate outdoors tend to be, maybe I'm misspeaking here, but tend to be aware whether or not they're on BLM managed lands. Or am I mistaken about that? Is there confusion about whether or not they're in the territory that these restrictions may be in place?
For the most part, people aren't. I mean, all of our recreation areas are pretty well signed, but because we're so spread out across the state, there's a lot of times that BLM lands, there won't be any kind of signage or anything, but most people that are out recreating, whether it be hiking or hunting or, you know, target shooting, most of the time those people know where they are, because they're using different, there's a lot of different apps out there and stuff that show ownership of all the lands that they're on. So they typically do know if it's BOR or BLM lands or DNR or, you know, Forest Service or somewhere, you know, on this, another state agency. So,
so your jurisdictions work pretty closely together, hand in hand?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
So your jurisdictions, whether it's a BLM, DNR, Forest Service, tend to work pretty closely together. I know they do when disaster strikes and we get in the middle of a big fire situation, but they work pretty closely together on a year-round basis?
Yep, and not just our federal partners, but also state and county. So because we're so small and so spread out, we really rely on especially the rural fire departments to for what we call initial attack when fire first starts, just so we, you know, somebody's there right away, and then we can hopefully get a crew out there to assist as well.
We want to make sure that folks are aware there are teeth behind these violations. There are fines and even possibility of penalties of imprisonment. So make sure you're following all of the rules, and we don't want any folks having to go out and fight fires unnecessarily. So who makes the decision on these? Is it just come on a typical date, or is it based on conditions each summer, Jeff?
No, so our district manager is the one that ultimately makes the decision and signs the order, but it's not a typical date like last year. It was around July 18th, I believe. It just depends on what our partners are doing, and then also mostly on what the projections are for the fire season and the weather, and just how dry and how many fuels there really are out. I mean, some people might be going, well, it looks kind of green still to me, but there's a lot of really dry cheatgrass that's out and that will really carry a fire really quickly.
Yes, it's been very dry, and of course at least in our area, we've been under red flag warnings and usually also a high wind warning. Usually it seems you get one or the other, but simultaneous warnings here over the last couple of days at the same time, and they've dropped those. But we still have very high winds to 25-mile-an-hour wind gusts in our forecast into Saturday. So we're not really getting much of a break from very dangerous and fire-spreading weather here for the next couple of days at least. So, well, anything else we should know about the Bureau of Land Management and these fire restrictions that take effect starting midnight Saturday morning?
Nope, just that we really appreciate people thinking about what they're doing and where they're parking, and because that's another thing, you know, if you park on the side of the road when you get out to a campground, there's some dry grass. Your tailpipe or catalytic converter can ignite that just, you know, in a minute. So just all of the things we talked about before, too, just kind of making sure, and then even when you do a campfire in the places that are allowed, just to make sure that it's properly doused and definitely cold before you leave it unattended.
Oh, great, great advice. Thank you, Jeff. Jeff Clark, who's the Bureau of Land Management Public Affairs Officer for our region. Appreciate your time today and the timely warning as these restrictions go into effect. And a great rest of the afternoon. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
All right. These orders that we just heard about take effect midnight Saturday morning, and we still have gusty winds to around 20 miles an hour through Saturday's forecast. So good information there. News Radio 560 KPQ time is 12:46, and just kind of dovetailing with that, we have the Okanagan-Wenatchee National Forest Service report with Robin DiMario, who talks about the situation out on the forest as well.
Well, we've had some big winds over the past couple of days, so folks need to be on the lookout for trees across roads and trails. It's always a good idea to carry a saw with you in case a tree has fallen on the roadway behind you, blocking your exit from a dead-end road. And with so many dead trees from fires over the last few years, there's a huge potential to encounter a fallen tree. Also, be sure to slow down when driving around blind corners. There may be a tree on the road just around that corner. So it's a good idea just to be prepared, take a saw, and always let someone know where you are going out into the woods. Most of central Washington has moved to high fire danger. That's because grass, brush, and trees are starting to dry out and burn more readily. This is a good reminder for anyone out in the woods or around their homes. Be careful your activities don't start any fires. Sparks from vehicles or equipment, improperly discarded cigarettes, and campfires that are not fully extinguished are all common causes of fires that can completely be preventable. So again, we just ask folks to be very careful when recreating out in the national forest. If you're looking for a nice place to take a drive, why not travel up to the Box Canyon Viewpoint, which is located about 28 miles up the Eniat River Road. You can look down into the River Gorge, which spans a run of about 500 feet and ranges from about 75 feet to 150 feet deep. You can also see Fishtail Falls from the viewpoint, so it's a nice little spot to stop if you happen to be traveling in the Eniat Valley. One last thing, as the 4th of July approaches, just wanted to remind people to leave their fireworks at home. Remember, fireworks are illegal in the National Forest. Have a great day and enjoy your visit to the National Forest.
Robin DeMario with the Okanagan-Wenatchee National Forest Report. We'll come back with after the quick break and rundown news coming up on tomorrow's edition of The Agenda. News Radio 560 KPQ time 1249.